there was incredible bioluminescence. So there were just all of these microscopic organisms that were floating in the water, and they were making it cloud up and like impossible to see anything. But when the light was off, when I was searching around for my buddies, I would like swish my hand and leave a glowing trail of a handprint in the water.
Hey, I'm Danny Washington, and welcome to 21st Century Mermaids. As a dedicated ocean advocate, STEM educator, and avid underwater adventurer, I consider myself a modern-day mermaid. This podcast is called 21st Century Mermaids because it shares stories of women all over the world who are working to explore, understand, and protect ocean ecosystems using science, technology, storytelling, determination, and a bit of style. Guests we feature are actively welcome the United Nations Decade of Ocean Science for Sustainable Development and addressing the UN's 2019 theme for World Oceans Day, which is Gender and the Ocean. We consider the brilliant ocean warriors we interview on this podcast to be the epitome of what it means to be a modern mermaid. Intelligent, talented, intriguing, and fierce. These soulful sirens are using their talents and skill sets to turn the tide toward a healthier relationship between humanity and our big blue planet. It's so great to be here with you all today. I'm your host, Danny Washington, and I am surrounded by a beautiful mermaid pod at the moment from all corners of the U.S. So let's start off by introducing ourselves really quickly. Let the world know your first and last name, where you hail from. And I think I'd like to ask you today, what's your favorite invertebrate? I'm going to get really specific. An ocean invertebrate, because everybody always goes for the vertebrates. They want to talk about, you know, the sexy stuff in the ocean. But I want to know what's something that's interesting that you think, you know, most people wouldn't assume. So we'll go ahead and start. Let's see. Andrea, let's start with you.
All right. So my name's Andrea Contreras. I use she, her pronouns. I'm from San Juan, Puerto Rico. But I'm currently based in Washington, D.C. And my favorite ocean invertebrates are probably conch. I'm from the Caribbean. Carruchos are like my favorite food, and they're also very cool to look at underwater.
Great choice. I love it. And is it Eni?
Eni. Hello. So hi, everyone. My first name is Boluatife, but I go by Eni, and my last name is Owe. I live in Baltimore, Maryland, but I go to school in New York City. And I'm not going to lie, I'm literally Googling ocean invertebrates as I speak. And I'm going to say, if this page will load, I know sponges are invertebrates. I'm going to say a sponge. They're really helpful for dishes as well. Okay, that's my answer.
I love it. That's awesome. Okay, let's see. Chloe.
Hi, my name is Chloe McKenna. I am from Southern California, but I'm currently based and go to school in St. Petersburg, Florida. And I like jellyfish. No specific kind, just jellyfish in general.
Jellyfish are amazing. They can sting real good. Awesome. Okay. And Sierra.
I'm Sierra Garcia, she, her. I'm from Monterey, California, and I currently live just outside of San Francisco. And sea hares, I'm going to go with a particular kind of sea slug. I was trying to think of this favorite particular species of sea hare, but I'm just also going to say sea hares in general.
I love sea hares. Are we thinking of aplysia?
I'm thinking of, California sea hares, actually. Like, but the little guys in Australia off the Great Barrier Reef are also really cool, which is why I didn't want to discriminate. Just like, I'll go with all sea hares.
Sea hares are amazing. There used to be a research lab across the street from my university where they were studying California sea hares, and we'd get to go in there sometimes and just play with them, and they're just massive. Like, I could hold them with two hands, and I just love them because they look like little bunnies underwater. But anyway, well, thank you all for those introductions. Let's talk about origin stories. How do you all know each other? What's the connection? Let's break it down.
So we are all a part of the U.S. YAC, and the YAC stands for Youth Advisory Council to the UN Ocean Decade. And so we all basically represent the youth voice because we thought it was really important to be able to contribute to what the decade has in store, which is essentially bringing in research as well as advocacy and education within the ocean science field.
Excellent. And when did the YAC begin meeting, or when did you get put together essentially?
The first cohort started around last December and is wrapping up in a few weeks on December 3rd. We have already started transitioning to the second cohort, and then that will last until World Ocean Day. But we all came together as steering committee members within the U.S. Youth Advisory Council last December. So I've been together for almost a year now.
None of us have ever met face-to-face. Well, Andrea and I were actually friends before the YAC started. We have a long history from college. And with the exception of Andrea and I knowing each other, though, we've only all ever met over Zoom.
Wow. So virtual connections rule again. Yes, the age of COVID. But that's a beautiful thing. I hope you all get to meet in person one day, hopefully by the ocean as well. That would be incredible. So tell me a little bit more about what you're hoping to accomplish by being a part of the Youth Advisory Council. Annie, what do you think you've achieved in this past year that has made a significant difference?
I think that given the fact that so many people automatically going to be interested in ocean-related issues if you do apply for the YAC, it's mostly this ability to really expand what we already know that I've been really proud of. One of the highlights of the time within the first cohort that I remember fondly is every time that we would have a monthly meeting, we would often have someone to showcase what they were doing, their work. And we have just really incredible people that represent within the YAC, represent the science aspect, represent the science communication aspect, represent conservation, and just different aspects that otherwise we may be, you know, more focused on our avenue. And so that's the one space, one of the many spaces that we try to cultivate in order to expand our knowledge within ourselves. So that's something that has been beneficial. And then I'm sure Chloe, Andrea, Sierra can talk about all the amazing opportunities that we've had to externally educate other people. But I really enjoy cultivating that sense of community within ourselves.
I love that. Cultivating your community. That's what it's all about, and figuring out how you can work with those connections. So I'm curious to also hear from everyone else. Yeah, Chloe, what do you feel that you've really accomplished by being a part of this advisory council?
Again, yeah, I feel like I've been able to further what I already knew coming into the Youth Advisory Council, both in the aspects of ocean conservation and policy, but also like team building and leadership, and have like grown a lot as a leader within, like, by being a part of the U.S. Youth Advisory Council. So I think it's been like a really great opportunity to meet youth that I've never worked with before, and then reconnect with ones that I have worked with, but then just like grow myself and like my personal skills as well, and have been able to like cultivate a space where, you know, everyone's voices are able to be heard, and we're continuing to work on skill building, conducting outreach and engagement with youth outside the Youth Advisory Council. So furthering our goals, and then, yeah, just making sure that we are, because we were the first cohort, it was a learning process as we went. So we were kind of setting the framework for the second cohort and cohorts to come throughout the UN Ocean Decade. So it was a learning experience and, oh, okay, this didn't work quite right. So like adjusting and learning as you go, and learning to just be adaptable, was something that I had to learn like on my feet as one of the leaders of the USYAC.
Excellent. What about you, Sierra?
Well, I think that it is important to clarify what we mean by youth. Like, this is folks who are still in high school, folks who are still in college. I am, I think, the oldest member. I may be the second oldest, but I'm in my mid-20s and I am like the elder grandma in the group. And
not.
But when we're talking about youth, this is really folks who are like doing their finals or applying to college, or like in the middle of a pandemic, like helping take care of little siblings while they're also doing school over Zoom. And so I was proud that we were able to have a community, even with all of that like terrible back setting for, I mean, it's really not the most ideal conditions to build a movement around. And this is also the United States Youth Advisory Council for the UN Ocean Decade. So there are other nations in the process of forming their own youth advisory council. This is a decade, nearly a dozen. And we are the first one. And the U.S. has, on an international, you know, UN scale, not just representation of the continental United States, but also territories. We have members of the YAC calling in from American Samoa, Puerto Rico, and Guam, and in the second cohort, the U.S. Virgin Islands. And so it's challenging to have that many different time zones coordinate. I think that there's a lot of ocean organizations that have really similar goals, and a lot of them that have a focus on youth in one way or another. And so I think it's exciting that the UN Ocean Decade Youth Advisory Council kind of provides more of an umbrella for folks who want to advocate and be advocates for the ocean in one way or another in their respective homes and spheres to be able to come together. The Advisory Council organized specific opportunities for young people to engage in policy by setting up meetings with Congress people and discussing fisheries and climate change. And really, I don't know many high schoolers who get on calls with congressional representatives to advocate for the ocean in those specific terms. And even if someone isn't a member of the actual advisory council, you know, maybe they follow on Instagram, see the opportunity to be able to engage with the congressperson. And that is building a larger youth movement, even outside of the confines of the particular group.
You bring up a great point, Sierra. I think the backdrop of the pandemic and all of the unrest that's been happening in the world sets the stage for it becomes challenging to focus on some of the most basic things. And so I think as a leader, your focus. So I'm curious, Andrea, how did you manage to focus through all of that on this council? And then also the same question I asked the ladies before, what's the biggest thing that you feel that you've achieved or accomplished through this process?
Yeah, so the focus was really hard. I think at first it helped that this was like pretty deep into the pandemic when we kind of started coming together. I was able to come into a space with a lot of other people who cared about similar things. And like, it was really nice to like be in that space together and like meet new people and learn about other people's experiences with like the ocean and taking care of their homes. So I guess it like was kind of like a high point to focus on despite how hard a lot of it was. And one of the most exciting things about the YAC is like they all said, we are from all over the United States. And this has been one of the ocean spaces where I've seen territories be represented the most, like usually like in school and in different things I did. I was always like, oh, what about like Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands or like the Pacific? And like in this space, we have so many youth from these places. And we've really been able to have a lot of conversations with like our peers from like the mainland US and really talk about our territories and explain like what the situations were and come together and like support each other and collaborate on like being able to take care of our homes, which was really cool. And the other thing I learned was like, we've done a ton of stuff with like policy and organizing. And like, I learned from some of like our members in high school how to like talk to Congress people and like be ready to, I come from like way more of a science background. So yeah, that was really cool. It was really cool to have such a big team kind of helping you along and learning everything with you.
That's fantastic. I really love that because that shows how peer mentorship can really be beneficial in these types of scenarios when you're working in groups, working as a team, and everyone has something to teach another person, right? Like experiences define us and they allow us to approach things in different ways. So what role has mentorship played in your journeys? That's a big theme throughout this podcast. We talk about people who have influenced the leaders, the women that are featured here, because I know for sure, me personally, I wouldn't be anywhere near where I am and what I'm doing without mentors.
I've had a lot of good mentors throughout my life, and I've been really lucky in that sense. I think that more so than any one individual, the first thing that comes to my mind strongly is being involved with the Monterey Bay Aquarium and the Team Conservation Leaders Program, the Young Women in Science Program, Student Oceanography Club Program. I did all of the aquarium programs for kids, basically. And I was a pretty driven and intense teenager. And it wasn't always easy for me to feel super comfortable in my own skin, but I really felt at home when I was surrounded by other equally dorky ocean-obsessed teenagers at the aquarium, and also getting encouragement and mentorship and learning from all of the staff involved in the teen programs, as well as people not involved in the programs who were excited to help nurture and mentor myself and other teens, and how to get to talk to all sorts of different people from all walks of life about all of the different ocean exhibits in the aquarium, about a wide variety of ocean conservation issues. about the natural history of Monterey Bay, the ocean that was my home. And that just really empowered me.
I think there's two big like mentorship experiences that come into mind. I think one of them was when I was like in middle school and high school, and I worked there through like most of college too. I went to like a summer program on the Virgin Islands Sea Trek BVI, and I like ended up doing going from like my like advanced open water all the way to like my dive instructors there. And like it was the first space where I had really the opportunity to learn about like marine life in the Caribbean and like have like get to be a scientist and like participate in community and citizen science based programs and like really learned about like all the stuff underwater that I really liked to look at. So I think like everyone I worked with and everyone that like taught me stuff and like let me be a scientist. Someone else was like Emily, one of my professors. I had like three classes with her during school. She is one of the main like instructors for the writing program. They also taught the environmental justice course in our school, which is like the best class I took during all my masters, because again, they also brought in a ton of speakers to come teach us. So I guess like the mix of those experiences.
I mentioned that Andre and I went to school together. Emily was actually also one of the mentors that came to mind that I considered talking about.
Oh, yeah. That's wonderful. I love that.
I think it's like been different throughout different phases of my life. Since I was like really young until high school, I was like a competitive dancer. So especially when I was younger and when I was like starting competitions and performances and spending like all of my extra time outside of school, it was definitely like my dance teachers and like the community at my dance studio. And that's kind of where I built up a lot of my confidence and how I was like able to get into like youth activism and be confident enough to like get up on a stage and speak and present to people that may have known like way more than me, but I was at least able to like be confident and get over that fear of public speaking from like other experiences I had on stage and being comfortable up there. And then in high school, I joined Heirs for Oceans, which is actually the organization that the U.S. Youth Advisory Council is under. I was one of the older youth in that group at the time when I first got started and started the Orange County, California chapter. Most of the other youth were based in the San Francisco Bay Area and were at least 3 to 4 years younger than me, but I feel like I was able to learn a lot from them in terms of policy advocacy and presentations and educating others. And then also like the adult network within Heirs for Oceans, I feel like was able to provide me a lot of like mentorship, like opportunities. And I was able to learn a lot from them in the sense of like youth empowerment and the importance of including all youth and giving like a platform to youth, which I had like never really like had anyone like teach me about like your voice matters too. So I think that was like a really great and then like empowering opportunity for me. And then obviously like once I got to college, I, you know, have a few professors that I like really look up to and that I've gotten close to, especially in like the political science department, which isn't even one of my majors, that's my minor. But a lot of like my professors I've gotten close to through that, which I'm like really thankful for. And then on campus, I'm a part of a group called Florida PERG Students, which PERG stands for the Public Interest Research Group. I've been able to have a lot of opportunities with like our campus organizers that work with us and train us to run effective campaigns and how to, you know, do community organizing and student organizing. And then also the like full-time staff that work on environmental issues or like our political director. So I've learned a lot on like how to run a campaign, like how to engage students, like things like that. So I've been able to have those opportunities. I'm a junior right now, so like about 3 years in this organization. I feel like I've learned a lot from not only those like full-time staff that we have, but also some of the other students that now are seniors and are going to graduate next year, which is, or at the end of the year, which is really sad. But I've been able to learn a lot, especially for like plastics organizing and things like that from them. So I'm like really thankful for that.
Awesome. So we've only been recording for less than like 30 minutes. And I already know that all four of you are incredibly talented and phenomenal young women. I think joining an advisory council like this or any leadership role as a teenager or as a young 20-something can be intimidating. So what piece of advice would you give to some of our younger listeners who are thinking about trying it out, wanting to join a group like this or a council like this? Like, what would you tell them if you give them like quick two pieces of advice, one piece of advice, what would you say?
There's not a right way to be a leader if you are not into what Chloe was talking about, like getting up on a stage and talking to someone. Yeah. And if you're not like into teaching people how to scuba dive, there's just about infinite ways to be involved and to be a leader. If you're introverted, if you are not sure where your talents are yet, that's all okay. The most important thing is showing up. And if you don't have any ideas on your own about what that even would look like, once you have a community around you, you'll probably come up with some stuff together. And so there's really no wrong way to be involved as a leader.
That's great advice, Sierra.
I really appreciate that advice from Sierra, because I think that the way that we often focus leadership tends to be that one singular person at the spotlight. And so the advice that came into my mind is on a similar basis. It's a Toni Morrison quote that essentially talks about, if you want to read a story and that story hasn't been written yet, then you need to be the one to write it. And I think that if there's an issue that you're passionate about that are already being worked on, and so it's now up to you to contribute to that issue, because that contribution actually does matter, no matter how insignificant it might feel when you're starting out or how small it might feel when you're starting out. Those contributions really do affect a more holistic understanding and way to address these things. So just know that you do have the chance to contribute, and you really should take that chance.
I love that.
Going off of that, like, we need everyone to get involved in the movement, not just those that are good at public speaking or just those that know the science or like are science communicators. We need those who are also like very creative and artistic for like our social media work and newsletter work and outreach. And we need those who want to speak to representatives and are able to read policy and are like into that. Like, we need everyone from all walks of life, no matter what your talents are. A youth advisory council is a dynamic team that needs all these different skill sets. It's not just like one thing.
Yes, definitely. Bringing your talents to the table and fulfilling a specific niche or role that can serve the entire team and beyond, which is absolutely essential. And one of those talents that I think all of you have could possibly be the fact that you're all mermaids. Am I right or no?
Ooh, I'll take it. Yes.
Well, you're on the 21st Century Mermaids podcast, so therefore you are officially a mermaid. But with that said, I'm curious, what is your like interpretation of a mermaid? I think everybody has a different story in their mind about what that means. I know for me as a kid, like that was the like shining star in my sky, because I love the concept of being half fish or half marine mammal and human and being able to spend all of my time underwater. That's really what attracted me. And of course, I'm an 80s baby. So I was one of the first generations to see the Little Mermaid, you know, animated film. And that definitely like changed my trajectory. It made me want to pursue marine science and made me curious about the ocean. And I think it has a big influence on young minds, you know, when you see media like that. So yeah, tell me, what does it mean to be a mermaid?
Yeah, well, obviously I've been spending like most of my life trying to breathe underwater. I think it's the kind of thing that if that's like, you could be a part-time mermaid, you could be a full-time mermaid, but it just means that like, you find home at least sometimes in the ocean, or it's a space that like you enjoy being near, or it does something to you. It's just like a place that feels like home, and which, or somewhere you like to like sit next to and read by. Yeah, you just gotta kind of want to do it.
Yeah, I would say like pretty similar to Andrea. It's kind of like your second home, or like where you feel more like yourself and your safe space, and then also that you would want to protect or like speak out for the ocean, like on behalf of it. I feel like mermaids represent like a voice for the ocean almost. So I feel like it can be a symbol for female in conservation spaces or ocean conservation.
Andy, what about you, my beautiful Mocha Mermaid? By the way, I have a company called Mocha Mermaid that I get so excited about. But anyway, yes. What do you think?
Yes, plug that. Okay, so I was cracking up when you asked this question because, so I'm Nigerian American, and mermaids don't get the best rap in our culture. They're known for like luring people into the ocean and snatching them up. But I think that there are some positive aspects of that, because I know that they are known as like the guardians of the water. And they also, we attach water with like healing principles. So I do think that in a sense, if I'm going to take a positive spin on what a mermaid can represent, I think that it's having almost like an agape love for the place that you are from and doing what you need to do in order to protect it. So that's really inspiring. And I hope to, I've never been scuba diving or anything. I've yet to be called by a mermaid into the ocean to get snatched up. So I don't know. I feel like I need to experience that, because what Andrea and Chloe are saying were their beautiful sentiments that I want to explore.
I want to hear a little bit more about that though. What particular deity or entity is represented in Nigerian folklore? Is it Yoruba?
Yeah, so I'm Yoruba. Yeah, and I know that it's also very similar for my Caribbean friends. Andrea, I don't know if you've like ever heard, like within like Trinidad, Tobago, like all of those like other countries. I think that it's just because of the relationship, or really the folklore that would try to understand like fishermen and different people at sea and what could possibly cause them to be lost and whatnot. That was just one of the explanations that came up. And a lot of drama with, oh, how could a man fall in love with another woman? It must have been a mermaid that, you know, tempted him. So I see it as a lot of excuse making. But yeah, that's just something that I've been told. My mom's like, yeah, be careful. So yeah.
Oh my goodness. That's so interesting. I've read a lot about different interpretations of mermaids in different cultures. And so I love the story behind, you know, in Yoruba religion, Oshun and Yemanya. Yeah. And then there's also Mami Wata, which I love her story as well. So there's so many cultural references there. And I definitely implore everyone listening to dig a little deeper and read about those stories, because you'll see them in every culture around the world, which is awesome. Yes. Thank you for that, Annie. And Sierra, what's your interpretation of a mermaid?
I was really into this book called The Tale of Emily Windsnap growing up and the movie
Aquamarine. Oh my gosh, yes.
Wait, The Tale of Emily Windsnap?
Yes, I'm pretty sure. And it had like this beautiful cover with like different colors on. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So I've always found a lot of appeal in the mermaid stories. And I probably feel more at peace with the world when I'm free diving, like just holding my breath and kicking down into the ocean, than just about anywhere else. And Danny, you have like an actual mermaid tale. I know.
I do. I do.
I haven't gotten to do that, but you do feel that very sinuous kind of dolphining. It's a dolphin kick when you're swimming down that way. But I just, like, on face value, I love being in the water, and I would echo what others have already said about protection.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And like Andrea said, it's more than just being underwater all the time. Exactly what you said, Sierra. It's more of like a lifestyle and how you interact with the ocean, no matter where you are and how you feel connected to it, which is super special. I love talking to people about their love for the ocean. And let's bring it back to UN, you know, Year of Ocean Science for Sustainable Development. I want to know just like what the biggest solution that you've come to recognize that you think that youth in particular can play a role in to help us achieve our goal of protecting 30% of the ocean by 2030. So what is that you found through YAC? What's the biggest thing that we can do? There are so many different solutions out there that can help us get there, but what can youth specifically participate in to help?
It's like a pretty broad, like general statement that youth stakeholders of the decisions being made today, so we should be at the table or like included in those decision-making rooms when it comes to policy and all these other aspects of deciding, you know, what the next 10 years is going to look like. A lot of the decisions happening now are going to impact us when we are older. So making sure that we have a voice and can speak to, you know, some of the things that are being decided on today is incredibly important, as well as incorporating Indigenous knowledge into a lot of the things that are happening. This past year in the first cohort of the USYAC have focused a lot on policy and like policy advocacy, and have partaken in 3 Hill Days, if I'm not mistaken, and are always advocating for, you know, including more Indigenous knowledge into the policy when it comes to crafting the policy, and then also like on the implementation side, making sure that Indigenous voices and Pacific representation and, you know, territorial representation is always included when it comes to these aspects. So that's something that we're always voicing our opinions on, is that that should be increased and improved upon.
Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah. I'm going to shout out one of our members. Her name is Amber, because one of the things that was really important to me as someone who's grown up mostly in cities is trying to bridge this like urban, suburban slash rural divide in how exactly we interact and respect and think of nature, especially within like our different waterways. And so I know that Amber did, along with Sierra, because Sierra brought up this idea of doing an ocean walk. And so Amber did an ocean walk in, I'm pretty sure she did it on the Rockaways in New York City. And to me, that's just something that's really special, because we have to understand that as more individuals are moving towards urban centers, we don't necessarily want to lose the respect and reverence that the natural world deserves, right? And I think also this understanding of really changing our perspective of what is nature is so important, because you have to respect the Catskills, which is where a lot of us get our water in New York City, but you also have to respect the visible aspects that you see and that you interact with. And so for me, I think that having this mentality of trying to expand this knowledge to all communities and to really make it localized is something that's really important. And I think that that's something globally that we can be more involved in, because it's not just people that live on beaches that are going to be affected by these issues. It's really everyone. And so I think that making sure that people are well informed about their local waterways, about their local natural environments, that's something that I hope to see more, and have that motivate people and mobilize people more to get involved in the way that they see fit.
I think one of the biggest solutions we have is community-based research monitoring, which leads to like community decision making and like really actions that we take to take care of our oceans being like place driven and locally based. And again, like bringing in like indigenous knowledge and having people who like have been stewards of their lands for like thousands of years, like really respecting their knowledge and their space and their expertise in those fields. And I think, right, like the Ocean Decade's been really focused, and I've gone to a few talks on like really cool, like global scale technologies and observation systems that are going to be able to tell us a lot about our oceans. But we really need to make sure that that information is not just like freely accessible, which is already pretty big barrier, but also like, you know, it should be made into programs that like can deliver like some sort of like result in a way that like, you know, someone running the community somewhere in California or Hawaii or Puerto Rico can look at the information and be like, oh yeah, like this is our problem. Like this is the information we have. These are the needs of our home and the people in our community here. This is what we need to do.
So for my final question before we go, I would love to hear your perspective on what you hope the world will look like 20 years from now. We achieve the 2030 goal, and then when we get to 2040, when you all are well into your adulthood, what do you envision? I think that we don't take enough time to really speak it to life when we're talking about all the challenges, all the things, the hurdles we have to overcome, right? I think it's equally important for us to also talk about what we want and what we hope for in the future. So what is that vision? What does the world look like? What does a healthy ocean look like, a healthy planet and healthy people?
I definitely hope that everyone will know what 30 by 30 means, that there will be more people that are coming from these different backgrounds that might not come specifically from the science field, but know not only the science, but also the policy and the communication side of things, just because I think that too often right now, these are conversations that are being had only in certain rooms. And so I do hope that in the future, moving forward, that this kind of information, like Andrea was saying, is accessible. And not only that it's accessible, but it's digestible, because we are putting a concerted effort to make sure that within media, within different ways of disseminating information, we are really highlighting that this is something that should be of global importance to everyone. And so for me, that's what I hope that the future looks like. It looks like a place in which these kind of conversations are not only broadcast to a certain community, but to the community as a whole, just because of how important it is to each and everyone's life.
My vision 20 years from now is like, I really want us to be able to be on track and like in a place where like I could move back to Puerto Rico and like raise my family there and like not have to worry about like hurricanes. I want us to be able to like have a healthy enough system that like we can have like parrotfish and conch and like a spiny lobster. And like, I want to teach them how to scuba dive. I want people to be home no matter where like that is for them and for it to be safe.
Thank you, Andrea. That's quite the vision. That's a safe space for everyone. I feel that. I feel that deeply. Thank you.
I think like my vision for 20 years from now is obviously like the UN Ocean Decade will be over. And I hope that through that, like the rest of the decade, at least, that youth advisory councils are, you know, thriving and able to create a lot of positive change. And then from there, like, I hope that the UN Ocean Decade was able to, you know, like Annie's mentioning, like everyone is able to know what 30 by 30 is and, you know, knows the importance of the ocean no matter where they live, especially how important the ocean is in terms of climate change and acting as like a carbon sink, and, you know, why the ocean is so important to everyone's livelihoods, no matter where you are in the world. And I hope that, you know, climate change isn't like impacting everyone. Like, as Andrea is saying, like, there aren't as many like frequent storms. I hope that we're seeing like the effects actually being mitigated and we're not seeing the impacts of climate change. And I mean, I'm from Southern California. I hope that my family doesn't have to, you know, evacuate their house every few times a year from horrible, dangerous fires and, you know, stay inside due to like the horrible air quality and things like that. So I hope that, you know, all communities are safe and like able to thrive without having to worry about the impacts of climate change.
A big part of what that means is resilience. There's not going to be anything we can do right now that will make hurricanes and fires revert to a pre-416 parts per million carbon dioxide in the atmosphere frequency and intensity. Like, there's just not, that's not scientifically possible. A lot of those changes are going to have to come from protecting ourselves in ways that are safe and effective in the long run for everyone. I think this is kind of a grim answer to a very positively framed question, but I think that the only vision for a healthy ocean 20 years from now is in a world with a radical drop in carbon emissions, and a world that is on the brink of going to a place where there's very soon no more net greenhouse gases being dumped into the atmosphere and into the ocean. And I say that in, not just because of some of the impacts that have already been mentioned, sea level rise and hurricanes, but also because of ocean acidification. And as all of this extra carbon dioxide is dumped into the atmosphere and the ocean soaks a lot of it up for us, that is really not a sustainable way to have a healthy ocean, even if we get everything else right with our fisheries and our coastal connections and everything else is, in my mind, not going to be enough unless we have that one key element. So that is the number one thing that comes to mind for me when I'm imagining a healthy future for the ocean in 2041.
I also wanted to add, like, going off of that is like, in 20 years, we're able to look back and not like ask, like, what if we were to do this sooner? What if, like, I want us to look back and see that we did make the right decisions, like, with enough time. I know, like, as Sierra's mentioning, like, we need to take action, like, very, very soon. I hope we're able to look back and, you know, see that some of our work that we've done, like, has proven to be effective and that we're not suffering all these as horrible, like, as it can get, you know, like, doing enough now in the right time frame.
21st Century Mermaids is a podcast created and executive produced by me, Danny Washington, Erica Woolsey, and Maria Sole Bianco. Our editor and sound designer is Vagabond Podcast Productions. Thanks for listening, and catch you later, mermaids.